to this week's episode of Zach on Film. This week we are talking Trumbo, the Oscar-nominated film. Joining me this week is Steven Schleicher, of course. Steven, back in 1947.
Yeah.
Dalton Trumbo. Mm-hmm. He's one of Hollywood's top screenwriters.
Oh, yeah. He was, like, signing some of the... He was the high one, I think at the time, the highest paid writer in Hollywood, I think.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he and nine others, through horrible circumstances, would end up being jailed, and then them and many, many others would be blacklisted in the Hollywood community.
Yes.
And would be forced out of work.
Right.
But for their political or sometimes perceived political beliefs.
Right.
This is a very, as Trumbo would state at the end of the film, a dark time in Hollywood and kind of for the nation as a whole.
Yeah. So what was going on that made this such a dark time?
Well, you know, we got out of World War II.
Right.
And we were allied with the Russians.
Sure we were. They were our friends.
Yeah, they were our friends, and they let us beat those fascist Nazis.
Oh, those Nazis.
Ah, Nazis.
Dang, I hate Nazis.
Unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
During that time period of the war, people became kind of enamored with the Communist Party ideals.
Yeah, I mean, what's wrong with Communist Party?
Right.
It's like, everybody gets some. Let's all share our stuff.
It's good.
Sharing is good. That's what you learn in kindergarten, right? You share your stuff.
Unfortunately, we decided as a nation to not like the Russians after the World War II.
Why?
Well, because we had a little thing called the Cold War.
Oh, okay. Because they started developing bombs. We started developing bombs. We needed to find out ways to make them the bad guy.
Right.
And anybody who shared their ideology.
Or a bad guy now.
Yes. So, you know, when you think about it, what socialism was doing and the only area where socialism was really being practiced was in the Communist Party.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you didn't have maybe you had a socialist party in the United States, but the Communist Party was kind of one of those things that, oh, here's a new party. Come find out, you know, this is the party of the people.
Mm-hmm.
This is the party that helped not get a lot of unions off the ground, but certainly it helped unionize workers in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
And they went after Communist Party, went and recruited from the writers, really some of the people that you would think had very little influence in Hollywood.
Right.
But they went after them and they promised, oh, you know, you'll meet girls and go to parties and do all these kinds of things. And sure, there were a lot of people in Hollywood during the 1920s through, you know, the 1950s that were affiliated with the Communist Party, even if it was just one meeting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just went to one meeting. I believe Lucille Ball, I want to say Lucille Ball was a member of the Communist Party. I'd have to look that up.
There was a lot of names, you know, kind of thrown around, because you're talking about pretty tight circles of groups of people. They get invited over a thing, they go to one meeting, and then they kind of get targeted at this. So it would not be absurd to say, you know, a lot of Hollywood at least went to, like, probably one meeting, you know?
In 1936, Lucille Ball listed her affiliation with the Communist Party.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, there you go. There's a lot of people. Now, there were some people that were not. John Wayne.
No.
Ronald Reagan.
Right.
Walt Disney.
Mm-hmm.
Were not affiliated with the Communist Party.
Because they love America.
Well, yeah, they love America, and they love this idea, especially Disney, loves this idea of, you know, I want to pay my workers what I want to pay them, even if that means that here are two people sitting side by side and they're doing the exact same job, and one of them is getting paid 10 times more than the other, and if you cause trouble, I want you out, and I don't want you rabble-rousing and causing trouble for my studio or my movies. And by the time Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs was over, there was a studio system at Disney where they had huge discrepancies or a huge difference in what the animators and other people were getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided to go on strike. And of course, this got Disney all in a tizzy. He just blamed the socialists for causing the problems that he had. There's a really great documentary. I don't think it's Ken Burns, but it was a recent two-part documentary series from PBS or on PBS about Disney.
Mm-hmm.
And the first half talks a lot about what was leading up to the problems with him going out and actively campaigning against anyone who had a communist or socialist affiliation. because he just thought it was un-American.
Mm-hmm.
Ronald Reagan had no problem pointing out people and saying, hey, that's a commie, that's a commie, that's a commie.
I mean, he was kind of, from what I've read and heard, that he was kind of the backdoor informant for, you know, the Congress and FBI to give them names. And then when he gets in the public light, he kind of backs off and doesn't really say anything. But behind closed doors, he was heavily naming people to this party.
So I forget who was the head of the very first Congress hearings.
Oh,
I'd have to look it up here. But
I think I have it up on my phone.
Do you have it on your phone?
Yeah, because I was Googling him earlier.
All right.
I was the guy in Trumbo.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who does the I probably still have it because I was.
So not.
Parnell Thomas. Parnell Thomas?
J. Parnell Thomas, yes. Uh-huh.
He was kind of this, I would say, probably up-and-coming politician guy who had this idea that we need to stomp out these communist ideals because there's no bigger influence ever in the history of man than the Hollywood and the film industry.
Mm-hmm.
So if they have these ideas, they will quickly spread throughout America. And we will be lost to the communist ideals.
Right. And so, you know, he was the head of this committee, and he invited Walt Disney and Ronald Reagan, who was the head of the Screen Actors Guild at the mm-hmm. time. And they were invited to participate as friendly people who were friendly to the government's hearings, to finding more about communism infiltrating Hollywood. What's fascinating, though, is beyond just this, there's commies are bad. You know, in the early days of motion pictures, there were times where the government went out to Hollywood and basically said, hey, can you do some things that will help support the war effort and mm-hmm. show Russians are our friends mm-hmm. and that we should all work together? And so there were writers like Trumbo and others who were writing stuff that had a pro-communist socialist bent to it.
Right.
And in many cases, just because of their belief systems, the one that Trumbo had written, I forget what the name of the movie was, but it took place during World War II, where these four women decided to live together and save costs and expenses on, from the war effort.
Right.
And he put a lot of socialist commentary in there, or at least some people saw it as, was it the Road Gang? No, it wasn't the Road Gang. Doesn't matter. Maybe it was.
I'll look it up. If I see it, I'll remember it. But yeah, so he put these ideas in there. And by the behest of the government, essentially.
Yeah, almost with the government saying, yes, please do this. And then suddenly, people are looking at people weird and saying, well, are you a communist? Are you trying to corrupt Hollywood? Are you trying to corrupt the nation through your messages that you're embedding in these movies that millions and millions of people are watching? Which is fascinating, because one of the things that Stalin had understood very easily is that film is a very powerful motivator.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it was not Lenin. Lenin, it was understood that film was a powerful motivator. And also Hitler understood, or at least Riefenstahl understood, that film could be used to really manipulate the audience. And so when the government sees this, and our head of the hearings,
Parnell Thomas.
Thomas, they're just like, we don't want big media influencing and harming our viewers.
Mm-hmm.
And problem is, Hollywood had already been going through a lot of problems, right? I mean, they had gone through the whole Hayes a commission affair where mm-hmm. it was like, either you guys regulate yourselves or we're going to regulate, and the whole ratings board. So it's like Hollywood comes knocking, and this is right on the cusp of breaking down of the vertical integration system for Hollywood. And so Hollywood's just kind of like, at times just feels like they're rolling over a lot of times on this, because they want to be seen as good Americans.
Right.
And Trumbo and nine others were called to come to Washington to testify. And they went there, and they weren't necessarily not answering questions.
Right. Right. And that's the thing about this commission, is that they couldn't be charged with anything.
But yeah,
you can't be charged for being communist because
there's nothing illegal. Right.
So, but they didn't believe it was Congress's right to have or to even ask the question, essentially, are you or have you ever been affiliated with the Communist Party?
Mm-hmm.
And they took issue with this.
Mm-hmm.
And so they banded together and said, well, we're not going to not answer the question. We're just going to each answer them on our own unique way,
mm-hmm.
knowing that they could be held in contempt of this court, which is the only way essentially they could go to jail, is if they just were non-compliant with this.
And the thinking was there was a group. I mean, this was right. I mean, they were totally in the right mm-hmm. in their approach and their argument of we don't. I mean, if they want to call us in contempt, that's fine. We'll just sue the government. I mean, this will go to the Supreme Court. And at the time, the Supreme Court was very liberal mm-hmm. in its thinking. And had it gone up to the Supreme Court, more than likely they would have been seen as right, that they wouldn't have had to answer those questions or be seen as members of the Communist Party. Problem was, and this is one of those rare, mm-hmm. super rare instances, the Hollywood 10 are held in contempt and they're sentenced to prison. And two Supreme Court justices die in that year that they are in jail. And I guess it had a split
decision. So
split decision. So it goes down to the lower court.
Yeah.
And they had to spend a year in jail.
Right. Which at this point in the film, because everything we've pretty much discussed is in this mm-hmm. kind of up first half of Trumbo.
Yeah. And if you're not familiar with Trumbo, I mean, it's almost like Straight out of Compton. Right. It's a biography.
Yeah.
But there's some coloring going on
in
the piece. But for the most part, this what you read in the history books, what you read up on the Wikipedia, what you read in, there was a great book on the Hollywood 10, is portrayed in this movie.
Right. And at this point in the film, there was already some inklings like, oh, this is pretty, it's a kind of a modern story, essentially. Mm-hmm. It kind of reflects on somewhat of a political mm-hmm. ideology right now in America.
Oh, yeah.
The a plot point is a Supreme Court justice dies. I'm like, this is too much.
I know, right?
It's too much. It's too real.
There are some, you know, the history repeats itself kind of thing. You see a lot of that going on now. Are you affiliated? Yeah. Are you a Muslim?
Uh-huh.
You know, have you ever been affiliated with any of these Muslim organizations?
Well, that was,
you know, and we see this kind of witch hunt for people because of their religious affiliation, mm-hmm. not because of their political affiliation, although I guess some of that's going on right now.
Oh, yeah.
But I you're right. There are some very interesting parallels that are going on between what happened with Trumbo and what we see today.
Yeah. And I mean, you see this coming up with the Sanders campaign of this democratic socialism, essentially mm-hmm. a lot of the same ideals that they were talking about in Trumbo of, but since it's not like they're not putting democratic in there in front of it, or they're mm-hmm. not putting republic, it's seen as a foreign concept that's un-American.
Right.
And so that's where this huge problem comes up for these guys when they're not trying to change America. Well, they're trying to change America, but not overthrow a government system.
Right. They just want to change the system. I mean, they want to make the system better.
Yeah.
And there's even, I mean, again, this is based on conversations, books, you know, recounts of what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a point where Trumbo is having a conversation with his daughter and she's like, well, am I a communist? And he's like, well, do you believe that everyone should be treated fairly and have access to health care and all of these other mm-hmm. things? And she's like, well, yeah. And he's like, well, okay, you're a communist too.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's just, it's not another point in the movie, he was saying, you know, I love America. I just think we can make it better.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, from the way this movie portrays Trumbo, he is not a menace to the world. But unfortunately, because he had this stamp of communist on him,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time we had spies were getting executed for selling secrets or sharing secrets to Russia, they essentially couldn't find work. In fact, even though they had contracts, even though the Hollywood 10 had contracts with the studios, there is a California law, and it's probably a very good one. I'm hoping it's still around, that basically says you can't fire someone because of their political beliefs or religious affiliations, mm-hmm. which is great. I mean, that's really cool.
It's a good one.
But there were those in Hollywood and in the government who couldn't stand the thought of these people working. And so they convinced the studios to come up with moral clauses. And the one of the moral clauses that the studios all decided to join. And there's a very interesting, weird conversation that happens between Hedy Hopper and Louis B. I think it's Louis B. Mayer, where she's basically saying, hey, do you want me to let everyone know that the Jews are running Hollywood in, mm-hmm. in her gossip columns? And so then the studios get together and they basically put a moral clause in that says anyone who's been a member of the Communist Party, we will null and void your contract. And right. so that's how they got out of firing. That's how they were able to fire these writers, mm-hmm. which again, wow, really weird.
Yeah.
And it's not just writers. I mean, this was actors. Oh, I mean, yeah. there were people all up and down the scale, but Trumbo focuses on Trumbo as mm-hmm. the writer, as well as the people that were close to him.
It gets a little bit into the actor side with some of the people Trumbo's mm-hmm. related to, or not related to, affiliated with in mm-hmm. the Hollywood system, and how they kind of get attacked for being affiliated with this Communist Party ideas. Right. And so you see that, and I think there's some really good character interaction in Trumbo because of that, because some people aren't as believing or steadfast right. in their belief in this communist cause, and they see that waver.
It's really interesting because there's a weird... Here's one of the things that you should try to avoid when you are casting actors for your film. There are two different characters in this movie. One is playing Ross, who becomes the head of Ross Studios,
right?
Who had a passing affiliation with the Communist Party.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the gangster actor as he's portrayed.
Yes.
Gosh, I can't forget. Can't remember his name. But those two actors look so much alike.
Yes.
So you had Buddy Ross, who's played by Roger Bart. And then the other one, I'm trying to find it really quick, is, I can't find his name now. But,
I'm
always totally, talking like that, Shane.
Yeah, totally blanking on him.
Played by another actor, and they look enough alike.
Yes.
That I kept thinking, what's going on with this guy? Is he having, some kind of disorder where we're not able to understand why he keeps flip-flopping on his approach to, oh, I want to support you guys, but oh no, I can't support you guys.
Right.
And it was the weirdest thing. So when you're casting actors, please don't cast people that look too much alike
mm-hmm.
because it's going to confuse the audience.
Well, and especially because they're not in a majority of the film.
You right.
aren't familiar with their face enough
right.
to distinguish them, because I was like, I'm going to have to go back and rewind this because did I miss this development in this character? Of course, then it got
Edward
really
G.
weird.
Edward G. Robinson. Yeah, that's who I'm thinking of.
Because then it got really weird because one of them flipped in the Congress trial.
Right.
And gave him up. And then isn't
yeah,
the
so,
other
and then
one
Robinson,
come out later?
Yeah, Eddie Robinson, Edward G. Robinson is like selling his stuff because he can't find work.
Right.
And Buddy Ross, who has this studio, he can't get his films distributed unless he names names. And so it's like, it is really weird to see
mm-hmm.
those two that look so much alike. That's Michael Stuhlbarg, who's playing Edward G. Robinson. It's just really weird mm-hmm. how that laid out. So,
well, there was a couple of weird actor things in this. Mm-hmm. And some of it was the aging of Trumbo's kids.
Yeah.
Because some of it was like, was that a year
Trumbo,
or was
Trumbo
it like 10
went,
years?
No, Trumbo went away for 1 year
yeah.
in 1950 and returned in 1951.
Yeah.
And his kids have sprung up,
yeah,
you know,
like,
10 feet.
That girl grew
yeah.
a foot and a half
well,
in age
which
about
is not,
5 years.
Which is not, uncommon for a kid to shoot up that quickly, but it was a totally different yeah. person, so that in the movie, when he comes back from prison,
mm-hmm.
The audience is reintroduced to his kids again because he's getting out and he's like, oh, my son by name. Here's my son's name
right.
that I mentioned the last time when there was a younger kid playing you. And oh, my daughter who was the second youngest daughter. Oh, yeah. And they did that in there just to make sure that the audience was clear
yeah.
on what was going on. So I thought that was a little weird. You're right. Now, from what I understand, Trumbo did go through some rapid aging because of the stress of all of this and the
really?
Long hours that he was working. So to see in one scene Bryan Cranston walking around and then suddenly a year has passed and he's like kind of hunched over and he's got much more gray hair.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently that's really what happened.
Yeah.
So that was odd.
Yeah, because it just got like gray.
Yeah.
It was gray
yeah.
so fast.
Yeah.
I was like taken aback.
There are some other things that, so here's the deal. Trumbo decides that he's not going to stop working.
Right.
And so he sells his ranch because mm-hmm. he's, again, one of the top paid people. He goes and he lives in a smaller house and he starts working for the King brothers, just cranking out schlocky scripts for them week after week after week. And they're paying him like $1,200 a script or something like that, and yeah. really getting some good stuff. And in the process, he gets some of these other writers also on board where they're getting money so that they have money to survive and feed their families. But it's not the big Hollywood money that they had before. But it's this really weird scheme where essentially Trumbo has people sneaking out and delivering scripts and getting money and answering the phone and phones in different ways. So no one knows what's going on. So no one can accuse Trumbo or the studios or the King brothers in this case that they're hiring someone who is on the blacklist, who's mm-hmm. who's part of the Communist Party. And this just goes on for a long, long time. But, you know, he cannot put his name on anything. And then he has this idea for a movie that he sells to the King brothers, The Brave One, mm-hmm. 1956. And he doesn't put his name on it. He just lists it as Robert Rich. And the movie is so good that it wins an Academy Award.
Right.
And he cannot go and pick that trophy up
nope.
because this is against the rules. Like, he shouldn't be working. He shouldn't be doing these things.
But that wasn't even the first one technically he won, because then...
Oh, right. Roman Holiday.
Who he had one of his writer friends before he got blacklisted.
Right.
Listed sell.
Yes.
And that ended up winning an Academy Award.
Yeah. From Ian McClellan Hunter.
Right.
Is one of his friends. And he said, please just put your name on it. I'll split the selling of this film 50 script with you 50-50. Mm-hmm. And I can just get some money. And of course, then a Roman Holiday with Audrey Hepburn
yeah.
Goes on to win an Academy Award. So, you know, this guy, Trumbo, won like what? 3-4 different Academy Awards, all without his name on them. Actually, I guess...
he won like the last one, but he didn't get to go accept it, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was the one he went and accepted. So word's getting around that we think Trumbo is this rich guy, or mm-hmm. we think that Trumbo is working under assumed names. And so there's this kind of hunt in the movie of, you know, what's going on with Trumbo. And at the same time, his family is having some difficulty coping with things. He's stressing out because he's working nonstop. Mm-hmm. He's drinking alcohol and then taking uppers to keep going. So it's a really mess. He's had a bad back. I mean, that was established in one of the very first scenes that he had a bad back, and that's why he's always working in
right.
the bathtub.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He's just like, subtle. It's like, it's kind of subtle. Where he just like put the pillow behind his back when he's mm-hmm. in his chair, and then he just is in the tub like the rest of the movie.
Yeah. But then Kirk Douglas is like, I want you to write, you know, especially after the Brave One.
Mm-hmm.
Kirk Douglas reaches out to him and says, I want you to adapt Spartacus for me. And I want you to write the script for Spartacus, mm-hmm. and I want you to be, I want to put your name on it. I mean, this is 15 years. This is 1960
mm-hmm.
After the HUAC committee hearings. And so he's kind of getting excited about this. And then Otto Preminger shows up, who was also one of the things they didn't mention in the film. He was also one of the people who was named, who was subpoenaed to come to the HUAC committee to testify on whether he was a communist or not.
Oh.
That was not touched on in the movie. But because he was German, he flew in, made his comments, and flew back out during that whole time period.
I remember this now.
But then he comes in and he's like, hey, I know you're working on this Spartacus film, but I want you to write Exodus for me as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he also wants to put Trumbo's name on the film, up on the screen, on the script. And of course, this causes a tizzy with Hollywood and the American... those that were super pro-American in the film. And they're moving ahead with it, and studios are buying it, and Hedy Hopper and John Wayne and others are trying to get people to boycott this.
Mm-hmm.
And then John Kennedy, the president, goes and sees this film, which, you know, shouldn't be seen by a president if you're trying to avoid people that are affiliated with communism. And on the night that he comes out and said it was a good film, that's the end of the blacklist. No, it doesn't matter anymore
mm-hmm.
whether these people were blacklisted or not. I mean, it does matter. But, I mean, essentially they could go work under their own names again. And so Trumbo went on, and he's got a huge number of lists. But when we look at Spartacus, Exodus, The Last Sunset, Lonely Are the Brave, He did how many films after Spartacus? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 films after Spartacus. So he had a long career through the 1970s, and that's when the movie ends, is when he's accepting his award.
Mm-hmm.
He was not able to go and get his Academy Award for Roman Holiday until 1993. He had already passed away.
Right.
But they did rerun a trophy for him for that with his name on it. He was given the one for The Brave One, and I believe his wife picked that up in 1970-something. Or 80-something?
I think it might have been the 90s, too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
all right.
I think they were like both in the 90s.
So in the end, from this film, what are we supposed to walk away with? Do we understand Trumbo more?
That's an interesting, because I felt like the first half of the movie really sets up the plot, but the character, mm-hmm. and they kind of set up the character of Trumbo, but mm-hmm. his arc really is in the second where he... Because you don't know, and I think his friend, who's played by Louis C.K.,
right.
in the beginning of the film,
mm-hmm.
lays some seeds for Trumbo's character arc and how he even can, I think, even further his communist ideas, essentially.
Right, well, yeah, because I would say Louis C.K.'s character is much more communist than,
yes.
or at least wanting to push those ideas than Trumbo is. In fact,
yeah.
In one of the scenes, one of the King brothers, played by John Goodman, is like, hey, this is a movie about an alien that comes down and is having sex with the farmer's daughter, and you're writing in all this stuff about communist stuff.
Yeah.
And Trumbo's like, okay, I'll fix this. And he tries to have a talk with the Louis C.K. character, and he's just like, I'm not having any of this. I mean, this is what I believe in, and I'm going to write this into mm-hmm. these things. And then so they kind of have a parting of ways for a while.
Right.
And then he eventually dies from lung cancer.
Yeah. And so that is like one of the big conflicts with... I felt Trumbo in the mm-hmm. second half that he eventually has to reconcile by kind of writing real movies or like quote mm-hmm. unquote like real movies again.
Right. Not B movies.
Yeah. Because that's the conflict. If you're like, you're trying to figure out what is Trumbo's goal in the second half. Is it just money? Because it feels like it's almost
It really
money.
Does feel like,
it's
his like money.
He's just trying mm-hmm. to make a lot of money
mm-hmm.
and he's not really trying to fight the system for the ideals anymore. He's trying to fight them to show the system, oh, you can blackmail me, but I'm still going to make a lot of money, which is kind of antithetical to his like ideas.
Yes, right, because that was one of the things that Louis C.K. and the character and Trumbo have mm-hmm. a conversation about, is that, you know, Louis C.K.'s character is not making a lot of money. He's not
right.
rich like Trumbo, but Trumbo, you know, and he points out, he says, yeah, but you're one of those rich communists.
Mm-hmm.
And Trumbo's like, well, yeah, I guess I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
And the money does seem to be a big driver mm-hmm. in the piece. And the reason I think it comes off as he is after the money only because money represents that, hey, I'm getting paid by something you said I'm not supposed to be
right.
paid for. And the more he works, the more he's sticking it to the system,
mm-hmm.
even though the system is relatively blind to what's going on. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not until The Brave One comes out that people are like, oh, King Brothers have been working with Trumbo all this time.
Right.
So.
And I'm cool with that.
Yeah.
That idea of him doing that. Cause I think that's just, a great stick it to the guys thing, but it does seem, I don't think it seems wrong in his character arc, but I think it fits his arc of trying to reconcile being the rich communist writer
mm-hmm.
and then eventually kind of stretching that out into not so much for the money anymore, which I kind of felt like he got towards with the end, especially when he kind of reconciles with his daughter
mm-hmm.
who was starting to be a political activist in
right.
her own right.
Right.
But he's essentially tearing his family apart by mm-hmm. writing all the time and not giving any of them essentially love or not showing up to his daughter's birthday party because he's so focused on sticking it to him by just making money.
Somewhere, now he had three kids, we mentioned before. His son, Christopher Trumbo, was a filmmaker and a screenwriter. Somewhere I remember reading an article about Trumbo as seen through the eyes of his son. And his son's like, yeah, he was kind of a dick to us. And he was distant. And he was always busy and working. There's a big scene where it's the oldest daughter's 16th birthday. And he's upstairs in the bathtub typing away and too busy to come down to have cake. And so the daughter freaks out and goes upstairs and busts open the door. And he's just basically, instead of says, I'm sorry, he's like, I am working. I'm busting my back working for you guys, trying to provide for you guys so you can have everything that you want. And you want me to come down for your birthday party? You know, and he just really berates her. And it's kind of like, man, Trumbo, what a dick.
Yeah, especially because he sinks very low in the second half of the movie. When you are rooting for him in the beginning because he has these ideals that are going to better, you know, the country as a whole, and individual people are going to be lifted up and everyone's kind of going to be on this like more level playing field.
Right.
And you are kind of going with him, but then he slowly just kind of falls down this hole where you almost can't even support him anymore. Where the hero essentially has fallen. You're like, I don't even want to help you up.
Right.
Like, you have to figure this out.
Right. Right. I'm not sure he does, because it's other people that come to his rescue. Preminger and Douglas come to his rescue.
Oh, yeah, but I'm like, same with his family. Like, he has to fix his family. Like, no one, his wife pointed out, and he could have still ignored her.
So let me ask you a question, because there are some things in the film that are radically different than what happened in real life. And one of them really kind of struck me as I was going back and researching some more on Trumbo's life is when he sold his ranch in, not Northern California, but north of Los Angeles. So it'd probably be up maybe around Malibu or maybe up a little north of that. Where do you think he moved in the movie? Where does it make it look like he moved to?
Like the suburbs of LA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
like one of those
Douglas just drives over to his house. Otto Preminger just rolls up to his house. No, he took his family after he got out of prison and moved to Mexico.
What?
And was working for the King brothers in Mexico. And a lot of the other writers were working with him in Mexico. Now, I don't know if this was just, you know, like Tijuana, Mexico, because all I see is just he moved to Mexico and was working there for the King brothers.
Oh, wow.
And that is not portrayed at all
where they are.
in the movie. So there's some, I mean, look at this as a Hollywood biography, very much like what we saw with Straight Outta Compton, is there's going to be some coloring of the piece to make people to compress time and to compress instances and I think in times to compress characters or conversations, you know, instead of having him have conversations with 10 other people, which we rarely get to see who these other 10 guys are.
Yeah, very real.
He really interacts with Ian Hunter.
Yeah.
Who is that played by? Is that
he looked very familiar.
Yeah, it's Alan Tudyk.
Oh, yeah.
From Firefly. Yeah. And he really has a conversation with him and Louis C.K.'s character, who is Arlen Hurd. And it's, I'm going to bet that other conversations that happen between those other Hollywood 10 have been compressed and condensed into interactions with these two guys.
Sure. Yeah, it's kind of like they needed him to be in the suburbs of L.A.
Right.
So they could... do the plot points of his
sneaking
neighbors
around,
kind of being bad to him, and sneaking the scripts.
Yeah, because they move into these suburbs in the film, and the next day he's out and he's going to pick up his paper, and there's a note on there. It says, to the Trumbos, and it says, welcome to the neighborhood, traitors. And then the kids are going to go out and swim in the swimming pool, which, you know, hey, get out of jail and you still have enough money to go afford a house with a swimming pool. And someone has dumped garbage all in the swimming pool and spray painted on the wall, go home, traitor, and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, there's some tweaking of the narrative here, which I guess I have a still kind of have a bit of a problem with, right? Because we're not seeing actual representation of what happened. It is interesting that when the credits are rolling at the end of the film, they actually, at one point when, Trumbo comes out and says, I am rich, I want my award, essentially, they actually roll that actual interview with Trumbo while the credits are rolling. And I thought that was really fascinating.
I thought that was really interesting too, because it seemed like the piece of the interview they rolled could have been very good inside the movie, because he's talking about his daughter and how influential his daughter was on his life and his decisions. And then eventually he said, if I ever get the award for this film, I feel like I'll give it to her, which I think would have been a great moment in the film.
Which was weird because he's not talking about the oldest daughter, the one that keeps talking to him about, yeah, you can come out and you can do these things. He's talking about his youngest daughter.
Oh, he
in
is?
That interview. Yes.
Oh, that's even more weird then.
Yeah. He's talking about, I want to give it to my youngest daughter. She was this age when all this happened.
Oh, yeah, because she was 3.
Yeah.
And, yeah, she had to live through this whole thing.
Without really understanding what was going on, while the older daughter, I think Mitzi, was the one that was pushing him and encouraging to do stuff. So, again, some weird things going on in that story, in that narrative. So,
yeah, I mean, and that's the good and the bad of these historical films is that they write them and shoot them and tell them in a way that is a way you can fit multiple years of someone's life into essentially 2.5, 2 hours.
Yeah.
And that would be hard to do if you kept straight with the script because there's so many little tendrils of stories that take place in your life that formulate the arc of it. And so you have to kind of mix it, but then you're not giving the full correct story to the audience in these, like the movie suggests, and because like Hollywood is very influential, so we believe this is the actual thing because it's hard, and you don't want to go look things up.
So Variety, in its review, said Trumbo may be clumsy and oversimplistic at times, but it's still an important reminder of how democracy can fail and the strength of the character it takes to fight the system.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, you know, I think it kind of worked. Is yes, even though it's not maybe 100% historically accurate, it is showing you what was going on. And as you said, there are parallels to what's going on today that we need to be paying attention to, or else democracy is going to fail again.
Yeah, you're right. I think that's a great point for this film, because why we can bemoan historical films not being 100% accurate. Generally, they have a point to the whole thing and to remind us of the past and how it can be applied to the now. And how not to repeat the mistakes of the past. And then that movie in Trumbo is, I feel like, pretty good at that, in seeing like, this is wrong. Like, we should not go after people and ruin their livelihoods because they hold a belief that some people find un-American. And that is a wrong thing that we should be very wary of.
So Trumbo has been nominated for a number of different things since its release. It was nominated for the Writers Guild Best Adapted Screenplay. It's not been named as the best as a best picture. But what we continually see is Bryan Cranston nominated as best actor and Helen Mirren, who plays Hetty Hopper, as best supporting actress.
Right.
And I think Louis C.K. was nominated for best supporting actor in the Indiana Film Journalists Association Awards.
Nice.
And also the best acting ensemble, which included everyone. In the Critics' Choice Awards. Those were all nominated. It's only won so far. Bryan Cranston has only won in the Palm Springs International Film Festival for the Spotlight Award as being an actor. Not best actor for this film, but just the Spotlight Award actor, with this one being the attached. Right now, for the Academy Awards, it's only Bryan Cranston. It's only for best actor. And we won't find out until this weekend.
Right.
So by Monday, this will already be old conversation. But is Bryan Cranston best actor category? I mean, is this, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
I think he could have played it without trying to do the weird little accent of trying to mimic Trumbo because that was very distracting and it wasn't consistent throughout the film.
No.
And I was drawn out of the picture multiple times by him doing his little speech.
I feel like that is one of the biggest failings of Trumbo, is that we're not too far removed from this, where there are still people. I mean, Kirk Douglas is actually still alive.
Yeah.
And I mean, most people know the main big stars in this film, and the dude who played John Wayne, how he did his voice. Like, the John Wayne voice is like already somewhat annoying to me.
Right.
And then someone doing a John Wayne voice is even more. And this guy fluctuates how heavily he's doing a John Wayne kind of impersonation.
David James Elliott plays.
Yeah.
But you know who would have been better?
It's rough.
You know who would have been better to play John Wayne?
Who's that?
The guy who is Putty from Seinfeld.
Oh, yes. That
he would have been a much better character.
I wonder if he would be too old now, though. How old would he be?
I don't know. He'd
probably be in his 40s or 50s?
Oh, no. I think he's well into his 50s.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can find his name really quick. But
yeah, you know, because he has a good voice. He does some animated work that I really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then there was someone else. Like
Patrick Warburton is his name.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like the Kurt Douglas thing was...
a little weird.
It was a little weird, especially when they put the I Am Spartacus. I'm like, okay.
Because they were actually using the film.
Yeah.
And you're like, wait, that's not the same. You know, it's clear that it's not the same person. Yeah, that was really weird. I mean, I don't know. I mean, there are some interesting things that are going on in this film from the historical perspective, but there's nothing in this film that is outstanding.
No.
Right. I mean, I think right now Metacritic has it at like 73% or Rotten
Something
Tomatoes
like
has it at 73%. Yeah. It means it's a solid film. It was a movie that I was super excited about because I did want to see this story told. But in the end, after it was over, I was like, well, you didn't see me tweet out this was a great movie.
Yeah.
Or, oh my God, guys, you got to watch this movie. It was okay, but I'm just.
Yeah, it was a decent film that I think has a good message behind it. But with the runtime, and I honestly, I think Cranston, as much as I think his work is very good for his overall career, I was like, there's, I think, better films and better performances from this year that would probably be more deserving of a Best Actor nomination than his work.
No,
he
has no chance of winning.
No, he has none whatsoever.
It's, like, it's one of those times where it's just an honor to be nominated is what he should say. So,
right. Because it's not that great. And honestly, the film overall, I think the production wise, I felt was very lackluster, and I thought they made some very odd choices.
Yeah, it was just by the numbers kind of stuff.
Because, you know, when you do these films of, oh, we're modern, so everything's in color, but then we'll show like a black and white film, and then we'll fade it in the color.
Yeah,
there were some choices that I just thought were very, very odd. And almost, and by odd, some of it was just too cliche to do.
Well,
like the TV of the HUAC congressional things, and it started off as the old like 4:3 frame aspect ratio for the TVs, and it slowly just went out into the cinema frame, and I was like, okay, I've done that. And it slowly goes from the black and white into color. Like, I think when the very first time they do it is when they're on set shooting Trumbo's film, and they start in the black and white, which is kind of jarring because you start in the color and you go to the black and white, and then they're acting out the scene, and then he flubs a line, and like, oh, and they just slowly bring it to color. I don't know why they didn't just do a hard cut into color there, because it would have been
much better.
I just thought they made odd choices.
Jay Roach, the director of this, you may know him as the director of Austin Powers movies, of Meet the Parents, Meet the Fockers, 51st Dates.
Yeah.
He also directed Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Oh, no, he's executive producer of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, executive producer on Borat. he was the executive producer on Bruno. He directed Dinner for Schmucks. He's the executive producer of Little Fockers. And then the director of The Brink Trumbo and an upcoming movie, All the Way. So going by this list, a lot of drama, right?
Yeah.
He's got a lot of drama under his belt with these films.
It's very odd. Especially the same with the cinematographer is Jim Denault. And he shot a lot of those films.
Mm.
I was like, this is so odd.
Which is weird because
it's three political, more drama type things. But like, what a weird career.
And maybe that's what happens when you're making a jump from one genre to another, when you're going from comedy and a lot of it physical humor comedy into something like this, which is not that. So maybe that's where some of the flubs come up. But I just thought it was by the numbers kind of staging, shooting, nothing spectacular, nothing that made me say, wow, on this film.
Yeah, especially when I read an interview with a cinematographer and they said
budget was super low, though, too.
Oh, was it?
It was only $15 million.
Oh, that's a pretty low budget, especially because
especially and considering everybody that they had in it.
Yeah, everyone was probably working really reduced.
They'd probably work in scale.
Yeah. The cinematographer said they like tried to shoot this in a way that kind of mimicked that time period, which honestly, I don't think they really did spectacularly.
I don't think they did either.
I still felt it felt kind of modern to me. They said they tried to color correct it into to kind of match that Kodachrome film back
right,
there.
Right, right, right.
I thought maybe at times it kind of had that feel, but nothing too drastic. I felt like that. I never thought like, oh, maybe they're shooting this on film. And
Yeah, no, none of that.
Yeah, so I don't feel like they really capture the time period in really any way.
So what's your bottom line on this movie?
I was going into Trumbo.
Mm-hmm.
I was not as excited for this film as you, like leading up to
it. Oh, right, right.
But then I listened to your podcast and was thinking about it. I'm like, oh, it's kind of an important time in American history and in film history as well. So I'm like, oh, I'm excited to see this. I enjoy Bryan Cranston's acting. I think he does good work. Let's give this a go. And I thought some of the messages were great. I really thought, honestly, I think the Trumbo story arc is an interesting one.
Right.
I just don't know if it was executed as well as it could have been.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of from a script, just kind of everything involved. Like, I don't think this movie lived up to what
it I don't think it did either.
And so I think I would actually watch this again or just make someone watch this because I think it's an interesting parallel to what's currently happening in America, which I find really interesting. But I wouldn't recommend this movie on its merits as
right,
a film
right.
in general.
I like this movie, but I didn't like this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I went ahead and bought it. I mean, I usually buy instead of rent digital movies anyway.
I actually rented this one, which is the first time
probably,
in a while.
Yeah. It's probably something worth visiting again sometime down the road, but it's one that's going to easily be passed. If listeners want, and you and I have just kind of brushed on and sometimes stumbled upon the history of the Blacklist and the Hollywood 10.
Yeah.
Last Zach on Film, I mentioned a couple of podcasts that really go into depth on this. The first one is The Secret History of Hollywood, A Modern Guide to the Golden Age of Cinema. And the episode you want to look for is called Hunting Witches with Walt Disney. I have this kind of rule where I don't like to listen to shows that go over hour and a half because they start to cramp into or step on other shows that I want to listen to. This one is almost 3 hours long, and it's fascinating because it kind of gives you the entire history of what led into the HUAC hearings, why Walt Disney was involved in this, those kinds of things. Very good, very much worth your time. The other one is an ongoing series for this year from 2016. It's the podcast is You Must Remember This, where they're telling stories of classic Hollywood.
Right.
They've done some, I forget the woman's name who's the producer. She does a fantastic job on these. But they started off this year with a series called The Blacklist. And they've just finished part three. And there's the new one, I guess, just came out this week called Blacklist Flashback, Bogey Before Bacall, which because Humphrey Bogart was involved too in this and really kind of got screwed over during the Blacklist. But you want to listen to of You Must Remember This. You should listen to episodes 71 and 72, The Blacklist Part 1 and Part 2, The Prehistory of the Blacklist, which talks about what Hollywood was doing before the Blacklist started and kind of introduces you to these concepts of maybe Hollywood was asked to do this stuff and then they got slapped on the hands without really understanding why. And then the second one is Crossfire, The Trials of the Hollywood 10, which is really specifically about what happened in Trumbo. Yeah. And those are a lot shorter. They're only about an hour apiece. So over the course of 5 hours, you can get a really good in-depth look at what happened during this Blacklist time. Part three of You Must Remember This was about, Singer. I forget what her name was. Billie Holiday, I think. I forget. But they're going to continue that, I guess, through this year. They said it's an 11-part one. So.
I've listened to the first two, and they're really interesting and really fascinating and really made me interested in this time of film and kind of American history, just what was happening. So I definitely recommend those because they're pretty easy to get through and they're really good listens.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And both of them are super well produced. They are done in a documentary style, which I really like. In fact, I'm working on something even before I started. It started when I started listening to Hardcore History about 6 months ago.
Oh, yeah.
And now that I'm starting to listen to Secret History of Hollywood, and You Must Remember This, I'm working on something that's very much like these stuff. Not as long, hopefully. it's kind of, you know, everybody wants to jump on the serial style of telling a story. I think these audio documentaries are fantastic.
I think they're really good, too.
Yeah.
So, any final thoughts? That's it?
Average movie, good movie, not a great movie.
Yeah.
Acting, some great actors on the list. I mean, you've got, like I said, we have
John Goodman.
John Goodman.
Great,
and we also have, the guy that's plays the blind man in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And he also plays the head of the radio station on that old NBC TV show, Talk Radio. You know that guy from Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
I know that does the little train cart.
No, not the blind guy. The guy that was running the radio station or the recording.
Oh, yes.
They are the King Brothers. Goodman and here are the King Brothers in this. And it's fantastic because he's kind of like the more legal side of the brotherhood saying, yes, we can do this. No, we can do this. Here's the money for this. And John Goodman's just like, gimme. We're going to make this great. And he's actually, you know, standing up. The character that he portrays actually stands up for Trumbo and the others because someone from one of the studios or from the movie distribution house comes in and is like, well, we can't distribute your movies if you have Trumbo working with us. He pulls out a baseball bat and is threatening the guy and is like, you get out of here. I'll do whatever the hell I want. You can't stop me. Is really good. Yeah. I mean, there's some really great moments in here. It's too bad it's interspersed with, you know, like 2 hours of dull.
Yeah. I really like the King Brothers' motivation for not wanting the get rid of the blacklist. It's like the money and the pussies are falling off the tree. You're not going to ruin this.
Yes. And they're getting great writers for like rock bottom prices. Yeah.
It's great.
Yep.
So I think if you are interested in what we've done on Zach on Film since we've started and looking at kind of film history through these films, I don't think you would go wrong with watching Trumbo. I think you would probably find it interesting if you like, especially what we did in the first part of Zach on Film when we first started. I think it's definitely worth watching and listening to those podcasts because it definitely goes into some film history and really interesting from that point of view. So I would definitely say go check it out. But that's going to wrap it up for this week's episode of Zach on Film. Hope you enjoyed this episode. I had a lot of fun with this one. Go find this podcast over at the Major Spoilers podcast or majorspoilers.com, this podcast posting page where you can give your thoughts on Trumbo or anything involved in the Trumbo storyline. While you're there, click on that Amazon.com link where you can do all of your shopping. You know, online shopping's great, Steven. It's so convenient and easy. You can get it shipped right to your door, especially if an Amazon Prime account. It's going to be free shipping today. It's wonderful. If you use that link at majorspoilers.com, it's not going to cost you any extra when you go buy, you know, your diapers or your newest Blu-ray movie.
Yes.
But a little bit of that purchase will come back to Major Spoilers to help keep the site going each and every week.
Every little bit helps.
So we'll be back next week with more film talk on Zach on Film.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.